Have you ever wanted to learn a new language, but just didn't have the time or money? I may have a solution for you. Her name is Jessica, and she gives free Chinese lessons daily at 11 p.m. Beijing time and 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Chinese is fun and easy if you have the right teacher. Let Jessica be that teacher and introduce yourself to the fastest growing language in the international job market today at tinyurl.com/tcjessica and tell her Ian sent you.
Do you like fine art but think it might be out of your price range? Do you have a vision for a painting that you'd like to see brought to life but you just don't have the skill? I might have a solution for you. Art by Daisy. With decades of experience, Daisy offers high-quality, affordable watercolor paintings suitable for hanging in your home, office, or even as a gift. With prices starting at just $55, visit tinyurl.com/artbydaisy to find out more.
Hello and welcome to the Deathcast. I am your host, author, and journalist Ian Tott, and I'd like to thank you for joining me as we prepare to take our first look at our next case. Specifically, we're going to be looking at Ted Bundy this time around. Before we get into this first episode, I have the normal show notes. If you'd like to follow me on social media, you can find me on any platform under either the Deathcast, Deathcast Pod, or Deathcast Official. If you'd like to help support the show, there's a couple of ways you can do this. First and foremost, you can go to your favorite podcast app, follow the show, and leave a 5-star review. Lastly, you can go to tinyurl.com/dcastpatreon, where for as little as $1.99 a month, you can get access to exclusive shows such as the story of Gator Rakowski, which was released yesterday, as well as early and ad-free shows, just like my friends Channel and Anthony have done. All right, now that all of that is out of the way, find yourself a nice comfy chair, kick back and relax. I've got my coffee, I've got my cigarettes, I'm sitting in South Carolina. Let's go in the crypt. The case of Ted Bundy is one of those cases that has fascinated generations, really, at this point, of individuals interested in true crime. I can remember as a child hearing Bundy's name on the news as they discussed his various crimes, and at that point I did not understand what a serial killer was, but I still found what was being said to be fascinating. And I can remember asking my mother when Bundy was put to death who he was and why people were making such a big deal about it. And my mother basically told me that he was a rotten son of a bitch who was getting exactly what he deserved without explaining further. And it wasn't until years later when I read Ann Rule's book, The Stranger Beside Me, which, in my opinion, is still the quintessential work written on Bundy, that I actually learned who he was and what exactly it was that he had done. With that in mind, there is so much information out there on Bundy in this day and age, some of it true, some of it false, some of it half-truths, that I'm not going to be able to touch on every single aspect of this case. I'm going to do my best. However, if you hear me state something that you know and can back up as being patently untrue, or if you feel that I have left something out that is of importance to this case, let me know. You can email me at authoriantotten@gmail.com, or you can come to any one of my social media accounts and drop me a line. So long as they're well written and you don't come off as a blathering idiot, I will respond. Theodore Robert Bundy was born as Theodore Robert Cowell on November 24th, 1946, in Burlington, Vermont. at the Elizabeth Lund Home for Unwed Mothers to 22-year-old Eleanor Louise Carroll. Bundy's paternal side of the family, that is, his father, has never been officially established. Although, according to his birth certificate, his mother believed his father to have been a former United States Air Force serviceman by the name of Lloyd Marshall. However, other copies of his birth certificate list the name of his father as unknown, and his mother, Eleanor, told people that his father was really a veteran by the name of Jack Worthington, who she'd had a fling with, but who abandoned her soon after she became pregnant. It's important to note that several individuals with both of these names lived near where Eleanor Cowell lived at the time of Bundy's conception and eventual birth. There are some members of Bundy's family who believe that his father could, in fact, have been his mother's own father. However, this has never been verified and cannot be confirmed. And as with a lot of things in this case, there's an air of almost intentional mystery and subterfuge around Ted's real parentage. As to why his mother had been in the home for unwed mothers, during this period of time and for a good portion of America's existence, it was seen as a social stigma for an unwed woman to become pregnant with a child. And you'd see this a lot, or you would see the child be put up for adoption after the mother was sent away by her family to quietly have the child away from prying eyes. It's not this way anymore, thankfully, but during this period of time and even up until the 1970s, this type of activity was very common. So after Ted was born, Eleanor moved back to Philadelphia, where her parents, Samuel Ketch Cowell and his wife, Eleanor Miriam Cowell, lived. And for the first 3 years of his life, his grandparents raised Ted as though he were their own son. So here we have young Ted Bundy. He is being raised by his grandparents, and he believes that his mother is in fact his older sister. According to Bundy's own recollections, he adored his grandfather and clung to the man as, you know, a real symbol of stability in his life. However, this changed around the time that he was 3 years old, when his mother decided that Ted needed to be brought away from this area, where it was very easy for him to learn that his parentage was not, in fact, what he had been led to believe. And here is where this already strange story gets stranger. Ted's mother decides that they're going to move to Washington, where they have family, specifically into Tacoma. But before she does that, she decides that they are going to change Ted's legal name. So she goes to court and legally changes Bundy's name from Theodore Robert Cowell to Theodore Robert Nelson. And it's been speculated that this continuing string of name changes in Bundy's life may in fact have played a part in the almost chameleon-like ability he was to show later in life, wherein Ted could become anything and anyone to those around him in order to fit in, not arouse suspicion, and get the things that he desired. Bundy later stated that leaving his grandfather was a devastatingly traumatic event, and that he never forgot the old man. but that he quickly adapted to life in Tacoma, which is something we're going to see happen time and again throughout Ted's life, these traumatic events that then lead to him moving to a different area and adapting to a new way of life. He was a very bright child, and Bundy was certainly a genius level intellect, something that anybody who encountered him quickly realized. His mother had chosen to move in with family members in Tacoma, not only because it was far away from those who knew them and might question Ted's parentage, but also because these family members had children that were Ted's own age, and he was able to make friends with them. Once they had settled into Tacoma, Eleanor, who had by now begun calling herself Louise Cowell, quickly joined a Methodist church where she met a cook by the name of Johnny Culpepper Bundy, and the two of them had a fairly whirlwind relationship. On May 19th, 1951, Eleanor Louise Cowell ends up marrying Johnny Bundy, with Ted not even 5 years old in attendance, and Bundy then is adopted by this man and given the last name of Bundy. With his stepfather working as a cook on a nearby army base, and his mother now working as a secretary, it seemed as though Ted had finally found a stable, normal childhood. And eventually, the couple would have more children, two boys and two girls. Ted stated that he never really considered himself a Bundy, and in fact, always considered himself to be a Cowell, as despite later learning that his grandfather was in fact not his father, he still considered that man his father. He also stated that his stepfather spent time with him, although it seemed that it was a begrudging interactions. Ted really didn't like his stepfather. Now, he was quick to point out that the man was not really unkind to him. He is known at times to have dished out corporal punishment to Ted and his half-siblings by use of a belt. Ted took on a lot of the normal activities of children of that era, getting a paper route, working alongside his stepfather to make extra money, picking beans in a field, becoming a Boy Scout, that type of thing. Although it should be noted that Ted, as he grew from being a young child into adolescence, became more and more withdrawn from his stepfather, preoccupied with his own dreams and fantasies rather than with the reality of the life around him. And that's something that, again, we're going to continue to see throughout Ted's life. He would rather live the fantasies in his own head. And he does this quite a lot. Bundy tried to project an image of himself that was very far removed from his humble beginnings. Ted, who would eventually become 6 foot, joined the track team once he got to junior high. And as far as his actual classes, he generally maintained a B average. People who knew Ted stated that during this period of time, they noticed that he was a very private person, refusing to shower with the other boys during gym class, which resulted in some unkind teasing of them towards Bundy. My own personal opinion is that this is something that should never have been a part of school curriculum, wherein young boys and young girls are required to shower with their classmates after gym. I know a lot of schools no longer do that. Some schools do. I think it's an absolutely ridiculous idea, but that's besides the point. Ted was becoming a very private individual, and some of this may have had to do with the thoughts that Ted was starting to experience when it came to puberty. Everyone who's listening has gone through puberty. However, not everyone has had these types of thoughts. Bundy never really discussed what it was that he thought about as he went through puberty, except during a few rare occasions where he let it slip that he had always been the way he was. But those were very few and far between, and in fact, references to that are very difficult to find. At Woodrow Wilson High School, Ted was known as a very popular, handsome young man who was well-dressed and had good manners. But they also stated that he was almost painfully shy, introverted, and no one can really remember Bundy ever having gone on any dates during this period of time with his classmates. That in and of itself is not unusual. Many young boys, as well as young women, experience that during their high school years and even later on into life, where they have difficulty dating other people, of truly connecting with them, or of attracting the opposite sex. However, knowing what we know of Bundy now, it's an indicator that he was starting to really understand and realize that he was different from those around him internally. Now, I'm not talking physical, but his psychological makeup was different. And that because of this, he was, as he would continue to do for the rest of his life, really holding the cards that he held close to his chest and not letting anyone else see them. As he studied those around them and learned how to mimic their actions and behaviors. And with good reason, there are stories out there from family members recounting young Ted exhibiting really disturbing behaviors. Perhaps the most famous of these is the story of his older cousin waking up to find herself surrounded by kitchen knives and 3-year-old Ted standing behind her, staring at her with an almost hypnotized look in his eyes. We have to take stories like that, though, with a grain of salt, because these stories did come out after the fact, after Ted's crimes were almost fully disclosed. But if true, it does paint a picture of Bundy that indicates he is, in fact, one of those killers who was born rather than created by the surrounding environment in which he was reared. Back to his adolescence, we talked about Ted being fairly popular in school. His friends were rather popular, bookish individuals who were more focused on student politics than they were on sports. And Ted, who did not get involved with any form of politics during this point in his life, would exhibit similar behavior as he grew older, shying away from individuals who were, you know, popular jocks, that type of thing, and instead flocking to individuals that Ted seemed to regard as having some sort of power and authority. When Bundy graduates from high school in 1965, and because of his scholastic achievements, he ends up getting a scholarship at the University of Puget Sound, which is in Tacoma. One aspect of Ted's teenage years that is often overlooked because there is no proof as to whether or not he did these things is that Ted was picked up at least twice during his senior year in high school on suspicions of auto theft. And this, again, gives a hint as to the deviant personality that is lying just below the surface and that is going to begin to show itself as Bundy gets further into adulthood. There are questions about Ted during this period of time, the early to mid-1960s and moving on into the early 1970s. Specifically, these questions surround the activities that Ted was getting involved in. Some people were told that Bundy spent his free time looking through detective magazines and fascinating at the pictures of dead women that he would find in them, while other interviewers were told by Bundy himself that he, in fact, spent his free time roaming the streets of the city, looking through trash cans and rubbish piles for pictures of naked women, as well as looking through the windows of women in order to see them getting undressed. And that oftentimes he would do this while under the influence of alcohol. Now, both of these things can in fact be true. There are numerous cases out there of serial killers exhibiting both of these behaviors during their adolescence, and Ted Bundy is nothing if not a textbook example of a serial killer. And I think it's highly likely that he did both of these things in conjunction with one another, as his budding hormones and the different makeup of his mind led Ted to begin fantasizing about dominating and perhaps even killing women during this stage of his life. There are also stories out there claiming that Bundy was seen as a bully in the neighborhood he grew up in within Tacoma, and that it was not unusual for Bundy to corner young children, bring them into the woods, and terrorize them, removing all of their clothing and doing God knows what to them, as well as building booby traps around the neighborhood that would injure these young children. These stories, while fascinating, are not provable, and as with a lot of things concerning Bundy, this information came out well after the fact that he was established as a serial killer and had been convicted. And as such, we have to look at these stories with skepticism, where there may be some truth to them, though more often than not, given what we know of Ted Bundy, we have to look at them and see them for what they are, which is a later interpolation into the story of who Ted Bundy was, whether it was to make that individual telling this story seem or feel more important, or to earn that person money and make the story about Ted Bundy juicier. I personally don't believe those particular stories, again, because we'd have no hard concrete evidence, and we really only have one or two people making these claims. Further deviant behavior that Bundy engaged with during his teenage years that would continue on into his adulthood was his love of skiing. Ted is known to have stolen skis and other equipment from people and forged lift tickets so that he could participate in downhill skiing events that were part of the school's athletic program. After graduating from high school, Bundy then works for the local power company in order to save up money for when he goes to the University of Puget Sound. He spends a year at this college, which seems to have been rather unremarkable, before working at a local sawmill the following summer and then transferring to the University of Washington, where he takes up residency in a dorm for students who are not pledged to any sort of fraternity. And during this first year at the University of Washington, Ted puts a lot of his attentions towards learning Chinese Mandarin, something I myself have been doing for the last year. Ted would later tell author Anne Rule that up until this point, he had never had any sort of serious romantic relationship with a woman, although he secretly yearned for this, and that the reason he had not had any sort of relationship with a woman was because he felt he was too shy and too middle class to attract the type of woman that he wanted. This changes, however, in 1967, while Bundy meets a young woman by the name of Diane Edwards. Now, Edwards has gone under many pseudonyms over the years, most famously under the name Stephanie Brooks, which was a pseudonym that Anne Rule had given to her, and this lasted for many years until Edwards herself decided to break her anonymity and tell her story publicly. Now, Edwards was a very attractive young woman, and while I'm not going to say that she created the serial killer that Ted Bundy was going to become, she did at least give Bundy his type, that is, the victims that he singled out. She had long, dark hair that was parted in the middle, came from a better background than Bundy, and had great ambitions for her life, as well as for the type of individual she was looking for as a partner. Bundy later stated that Edwards was the only woman that he ever truly loved, and that at first glance he realized he had very little chance with her, as Edwards seemed to prefer individuals that were, you know, the atypical jock, whereas Bundy was nothing like that. But he also stated while discussing this relationship that he had always found it nearly impossible to form any sort of a relationship or friendship with another person because he simply did not understand the underpinnings of society as to what made one person want to become friends with another or what made one person fall in love with another. Something I myself understand very well, as I'm just not good at those types of things. In any event, after a period of observing Edwards, Bundy learned that she had her own car, but that she also was into skiing, something that, as previously discussed, Ted himself was into. And with this information, Bundy is able to get a ride from Edwards to go skiing one weekend. Bundy later stated that they had a wonderful day together, and it was during the drive back from skiing that he realized that he was absolutely head over heels for Edwards, and that later he was bemused by the fact that she, of her own volition, began seeking him out to spend more and more time with him. They begin a very serious relationship, and in actuality, although there are other women that Bundy ended up dating, this is the only real relationship Bundy is ever going to have, as he is known to have shown pretty much every side of himself to Diane, including the vulnerable, unsure side. At the end of 1968, Bundy ends up dropping out of the University of Washington, taking a string of menial jobs. He also starts to dabble his feet into politics, taking a position as a driver for a member of the Republican Party who is looking to win election as the mayor of Tacoma. He also volunteers his time working for the Republican Party in Seattle. Now, Diane Edwards graduates that year and sees all of these things going on with Bundy, and somewhere in her mind, she begins to think that this is not going to work. So she moves back to California, where eventually she gets a job working for a brokerage firm. And although they continue to correspond, Bundy later stated that their correspondence became less and less, even after he got a scholarship to a college near where Diane was living. He stated that eventually she decides to end the relationship, and that it's the ending of this relationship that had possibly the most pivotal impact on Bundy in his life. It's not a stretch to say that the victims that Bundy is going to begin taking in the next few years bear a striking resemblance to Diane Edwards. Bundy would later state that when Diane broke up with him, he decided that he needed to have some modicum of revenge on her. He also discussed the fears and insecurities that he was feeling during this period of time leading up to the dissolving of the relationship and then the relationship finally breaking, stating that he felt that he was not good enough for Diane and that oftentimes she wanted him to do things that he was financially unable to do, and that it was his belief that his inability to do these things, as well as the fact that he felt inside that he was unraveling, were the catalyst of the relationship's death. It's from this relationship's ending that Ted Bundy goes through the first of many metamorphoses. From this young, ruggedly handsome individual with no real goals or ambitions into a charismatic being with a high degree of ambition and drive. And all of this does, in fact, serve a purpose, that purpose being to get Diane Edwards back so that Bundy can make her feel the same way that she has made him feel. Throughout all of this, Ted is really starting to show his deviant behavior. It's known that he befriended an older woman during this point of time at one of the jobs he worked, and that this woman helped Ted get various jobs as well as helped him in his failed attempts to win Diane Edwards back. And this woman appears to have known that Ted was getting into some illegal activities, such as stealing money from the yacht club that they worked at, as well as uniforms from the hotel where Ted worked. She found herself unable to say no to anything that Ted requested of her, and this is the first time that we really see Ted using his manipulative personality to get from others what he desires. Again, this is when he's going through this metamorphosis of the relationship with Diane ending, and he's kind of coming out of his cocoon as this very charismatic, well-spoken, well-thought-out young man. During the late part of 1968, Ted begins to travel across country, spending one semester at Temple University before going to Vermont, where Anne Rule surmises that Ted learned of his true parentage. My personal opinion on this has always been that I think Ted learned of his parentage well before this, due to the fact that his grandparents were no longer in his life as his parents, and that Eleanor was there as his mother figure. In any regard, learning of this information, whether it was earlier in his life or right after his breakup from Diane, no doubt had a devastating effect on Ted Bundy's psyche. And it's likely that that, in conjunction with Diane's rejection of him, further pushed Ted into really embracing what he was on the inside and helped him to build this persona that he would carry with him for the rest of his life. At some point during the spring of 1969, Ted ends up hitchhiking to San Francisco, where he encounters Diane Edwards again. And again, she rejects him, sending Ted away without even so much as an I love you, which to Ted was further testament to the fact that he was unworthy of her. From this rejection, Ted returns to the University of Washington and ends up getting himself a room off campus. It's known that he traveled to Aspen, Colorado just before school started using stolen skiing equipment, although his reasons for going to Colorado are as of yet unknown. Some suspect that this may be when Ted committed his first real crimes, be it sexual assaults or murders, as he's known to have told one acquaintance that he didn't need a ski hat, as he had a ski mask with him, something that Ted would use on occasion while committing his later murders. Again, though, that is just speculation on my part. Back at the University of Washington, Ted decided to turn his focus to psychology, and it's been stated that he really excelled in this field. My thought in regards to Ted focusing on psychology as his major has always been that I believe he did this not because he saw it as a viable career path, but because he was so broken inside, he wanted to learn what made humans tick because he himself did not feel like one. And if he could learn what they made them tick, he could manipulate them better to get the things that he wanted. And there is a lot of precedence for this, as there are killers out there who do take these types of courses because they are unable to feel as a normal person does, and therefore are unable to connect with them in any meaningful way, whether that is to gain something from that individual or simply just to become a part of their life. Ted excels in his studies, and eventually he graduates from college as an honors student, at which point he decides to turn his attention to learning the law and getting a degree in law, specifically so that he can be a lawyer. During all of this, Bundy meets a woman who there have been documentaries made about, as well as a movie with Zac Efron playing Bundy. She would become Ted's girlfriend for the next 7 to 10 years. She was an unwed mother of a young girl by the name of Elizabeth Klopfer. Bundy became a surrogate father to Elizabeth's daughter, who years later would write that around the age of 7, Bundy began sexually molesting her. Again, we only have her words to go on with this. Again, I don't believe it, just based on the psychology that we have of Bundy and what we know of him and his preferred victim type and age range. That is not, however, to say that it is not possible that Bundy did engage in this sort of activity, only that my experience and my belief is that he did not do this based on the established psychological profile we have of him. That would be outside of his normal activities. Elizabeth stated that she very quickly fell in love with Ted Bundy and just as quickly decided that she wanted to marry him, although Ted continually put this off, stating that this would have to be after he completed his studies and had moved on into a successful career. During all this time, Bundy works as a shoe salesman as well as at a medical supply store, which is going to play a part in his later crimes, as you shall see. Now, Elizabeth did note some things regarding Ted. He always seemed short on money, which she was more than willing to help him with, but he also seemed to look around her family's home in a rather appraising manner. See, Elizabeth came from some kind of money in Ogden, Utah, something that we know Ted did not come from. And it seemed to her that there was a jealousy as well as a longing in his eyes whenever she took him home with her for family get-togethers or holidays. However, she has stated that despite all of this, she stayed with Ted as he was very good to her and her daughter. But she also believed in him, something that even Bundy would say Diane Edwards had never done. It's known that Ted was unfaithful to Elizabeth during all of their relationship. In fact, she later told author Ann Rule that she knew very quickly that Ted was stepping out on her, as he and friends of his would go to a local bar in order to pick up women that they wanted to have sex with. But given how Ted made her feel, how he treated her and her daughter, Elizabeth decided to overlook these red flags. All of this is going on. Ted Bundy is continuing with his various petty thefts, trying to give an outward appearance of a driven, successful young man. Diane Edwards is still in his life, not just in his own mind, but physically in his life, as she often travels through Seattle area, and when she does, Diane makes it a habit to say hello to Ted, whether it's on the phone or meeting him in person. This further fuels Ted's desire to gain revenge on Diane. Ted is really beginning to put on these outward airs of just an upwardly mobile, good-hearted citizen. It's known that at least on one occasion he got a commendation from the Seattle Police Department after stopping a purse snatcher, and that he also saved a 3.5-year-old from drowning in a local lake. There is some speculation as to whether or not Ted himself may not have put the child in that precarious situation in order to make himself a hero. There is precedent that would suggest this is a possibility, as Elizabeth Koepfler's daughter would later attest. Ted oftentimes tried drowning her in the pool only to save her, and it could be that Ted was doing that activity with Elizabeth's daughter in order to practice how he would do it in real life with other people's children that were unknown to him. Ted also continually strengthened his ties to the Republican Party, working at various fundraisers and things of that nature. On his personal life, he introduced his parents to Elizabeth and her daughter, and by all accounts, from outward appearances, seem to have gotten his life together, have gotten over Diane Edwards, and he was moving his life in an upward trajectory. In 1971, Ted Bundy makes contact for the first time with author Ann Rule. Rule was a former police officer, single mother, turned aspiring true crime writer who wrote under various pseudonyms for detective magazines of the day. She also volunteered at a local suicide hotline where people could call in who were contemplating committing suicide and talk to someone. Rule would later state that she never saw anything in Ted Bundy's personality that led her to believe that he was such a deviant individual. She described him as, quote, kind, solicitous, and empathetic. Ted quickly went from being a volunteer at the suicide prevention hotline to a paid work study student, working 7 days a week from 9 p.m. to 9 a.m. And it was through this that his relationship with Ann Rule not only began, but they became friends. And it's through this crisis hotline that Ann Rule learns all of the things that she knew about Ted Bundy that nobody else did. It seems that with the exception of the crimes he's going to commit, Ted was a fairly open book with Rule, and she was an open book with him as well. And part of that might be the fact that Rule was older than Bundy, and he did not see in her a sexual object. It could also be that Ted, learning that she was a former police officer, saw her as an ally that he would need one day should he ever become entangled with the law. And this does, in fact, become the case once Ted and his crimes begin getting the attention of law enforcement. Now, Rule ends up leaving the crisis center in 1972, although her relationship with Bundy remains, and they continued to be strong friends. While Bundy continues his upward progression, being hired by various Republican campaigns in the area, Ted ends up leaving that political sphere in 1973 after he is not given a job that he was hoping for within the government. Ted would later claim to have gotten a job working for the law planning office, where he told Ann Rule he was working on studying rape statistics, although this would later prove to be untrue. Bundy ends up getting accepted into the University of Utah Law School after a major campaign from both himself as well as Elizabeth's family, friends, and the then governor of the state of Washington. However, just before school was to start, Bundy notified the school that he would not be starting the fall semester as he had been involved in a very serious automobile accident that would require him to miss classes. This, too, was a lie, as Bundy had been in an accident, but had suffered only a sprained ankle. And to this date, it is unknown why he did not start school during this point in time. Instead, he begins law school at the University of Puget Sound in 1973. Taking night classes and working during the day as an assistant to an individual by the name of Ross Davis, who was the chairman of the Washington State Republican Party. This netted Ted a salary of $1,000 a month, which for that period of time and for an individual of Ted's background was a very enticing amount of money. Ted also had access to a credit card from the Republican Party issued his name, and was allowed to mingle with and hobnob with high-ranking members of the political party. Again, remember, all of this is Ted building up the facade of a upwardly mobile, upstanding member of society in an effort to win back Diane Edwards for the simple purpose of harming her the way that she had harmed him. This is something that Ted has actually already begun to do. See, Bundy was the type of killer who was able to compartmentalize his life. That is, he was able to keep the different aspects of his life away from one another and from commingling with each other, be it his relationship with Elizabeth or his relationship with Diane Edwards or the crimes that he is going to commit. He's able to keep all of these separate from one another in order to be the person that that particular aspect of his life needs him to be at that period of time. Bundy really was a chameleon in that he was able to adapt and fit into any situation in which he found himself in and be what was required of that situation before seamlessly switching personalities later when the situation arose and he needed to. At some point during the summer of 1973, Bundy goes on a business trip for the Republican Party to the Sacramento area, and while there he reaches out to Diane Edwards, and she agrees to go to dinner with him. Edwards would later state basically that Ted wowed and dazzled her with the way that he had turned his life around. After this meeting, she agrees to visit him in Seattle and to discuss a possible relationship with Ted. She visits him in September, and he introduces Diane to his landlords as his fiance, something that Diane would later say she did not find distasteful to hear Ted say. And he spends the remainder of the year really wooing Diane at every opportunity. Diane later stated that as 1973 ended and 1974 began, she noticed a change in Ted. He became very aloof in his talk about the future, and even began ignoring talks of marriage, which she found confusing. Further confusing her was the fact that Ted seemed to grow cold and emotionally distant from her. In fact, during their last time together at the end of 1973, she stated that he seemed ready for her to leave, as though he could not wait for her to leave. He told her that he had been involved in a relationship with another woman that had resulted in an abortion and that he was entangled with this, something that left her massively confused, and that his lovemaking, which had always been passionate, had become robotic, without warmth, kindness, or love. Ted seemingly switched off his emotions towards Diane at this point, and when she finally departs Seattle on January 2nd, 1974, she is distraught, wondering if this man who has chased her for so many years has in fact grown tired of her. And after seeing a counselor and contacting Ted, asking him point blank why he had suddenly stopped speaking with her, Ted stated, quote unquote, "Diane, I have no idea what you mean," before hanging up on her. And it's at this point that Diane realizes that Ted Bundy had in fact enacted his revenge on her, that the entire thing had been a ruse constructed by Ted so that he could make her feel the same way that she had made him feel years prior. All right, we're going to end this week's episode at this point. It is now 1974, and Ted Bundy has exacted his revenge on Diane Edwards, and he is going to continue his metamorphosis from this point onward. I hope my Deathcasters and Deathcasterettes enjoyed this first part in our look at Ted Bundy. And until next time, stay morbid.